Greetings, lovely listeners. You are listening to Saga, a podcast where a dude and a chick discuss art and animation.
Thank you for listening to Saga Podcast. This week, we kind of changed things up a little bit, and we will be kind of discussing Scoob, the new movie that just came out on the 15th of May. But we are going to be doing character psychology. We kind of wanted to hit this movie because we weren't really even sure if it was going to come out because of the coronavirus, but because they decided to do it digitally, I think it just kind of makes it a little bit easier for us. So to kind of move forward, the movie is much like the previous live action that was made in 2002. And it has kind of the same feeling about demonic spirits and other dimensional creatures that kind of come through. But we do see the origin of Scooby and Shaggy's meeting, as well as the origin of how everybody met. And that's not really the entire story, though. It's only the first 10 to 15 minutes. And then we kind of see how the entire gang has to separate because, unfortunately, Scooby and Shaggy are dead weight and are forced to go do their own thing. But it turns out Scooby is the key to this other dimension, and unfortunately Shaggy is kind of left in dust. We'll see what happens as far as how Scooby and Shaggy kind of overcome this, because they're all kind of separated.
Spoiler alert, this audio may contain spoilers, so please proceed with caution or an open mind. I don't care.
Right, so since this is character psychology, the premise is we basically just talk about each of the characters and what was going through their minds during the film, and see if we can get to know why certain characters act in certain ways. So,
right.
First up, we have Scooby, the title character. Honestly, not really much to say on my part about him.
He's a traditional dog that can talk.
That's a good point, and it seems like no one questions. He's a talking dog. I guess because this is like a world where animals can talk, because we see Dinomutt, he can talk.
But he's a robot. I feel like he's given a pass.
Fair. There's Muttley, Dick Dastardly's sidekick. He can talk. But the end credits, when they're showing all of the characters, we see different characters from the Hanna-Barbera pantheon, and a lot of them are talking animals. So I think this is just a normal thing for this world, and no one questions it.
Fair. But yeah, Scooby is your traditional dog. Very loving, very loyal, very eager and happy to please.
Right. We first are introduced to Scooby stealing some meat from a market, and he runs into Shaggy, and Shaggy's sitting alone with his friends made out of sand, but Scoob jumps in, and Shaggy's has some sandwiches, and Scoob brings along his meat and gives it to Shaggy so they can eat sandwiches together.
Sorry, my dog just barked. So he's a very, very pacifist, very sweet character. I think that's traditional to the loner stoner type, kind of music buff. One thing you'll notice about Shaggy in any of the episodes or movies is that he and Scooby rely heavily on food to solve their problems, and neither of them have any real clear goals in life.
Huh. I was thinking when you mentioned food, like a dependency on food as like some kind of emotional crutch. And that could explain, you know, since, you know, we first see Shaggy, you know, eating like a weird snack. So I think that was a part of his character from the very start. Like that was his coping mechanism, is eating.
So that's pretty much it for Shaggy.
Oh, no.
Nope.
No. So like throughout the film, Shaggy is like seen, Scooby is this dog of prophecy, basically. Like he's the ancestor to like a Greek dog or something. And since Scoob is getting so much attention, that makes Shaggy feel a certain way. And, you know, at this point, Mystery Inc., you know, Fred, Velma, and Daphne are being recruited by Simon Cowell to, chart off on their own business. And, you know, Simon Cowell says you're only as strong as your weakest link, which would mean Scooby and Shaggy.
Which, So something about that real quick.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how weak of a link they were until Simon Cowell said it.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Never occurred to me.
You never notice how they're always like scared and eating when they're
shooting? I mean, yeah, but that's, you know, that's Shaggy and Scooby, you know?
Yeah. And the movie does make a point to mention that their hijinks usually ends up helping them out somehow. Like they're just lucky like that.
Yeah, they do have redeemable qualities that help them solve mysteries in their own kind of way. But I think it's because they're very meandering and kind of loitery characters that they just happen upon good at what they do.
Right. And I forgot the exact point that I was trying to make, but like I was saying, later in the film, Shaggy, after, you know, splitting up from the rest of Mystery Inc., it was just him and Scooby with like Blue Falcon and Dynamutt. And Blue Falcon and Dynamutt were characters that they looked up to. They were like heroes. And Shaggy saw the attention that Scoob got from them, which made him like feel he felt threatened by it. I think he saw that as like an attack on their friendship and the possibility of him being alone again. And you know, like he was afraid and he was fighting it. And I think this is my last point on Shaggy, but he's socially mature but emotionally immature. And I say that because there was this scene where it was him and Shaggy and Blue Falcon. Shaggy had Blue Falcon like pegged perfectly, like about his insecurities.
With his father and everything.
Right. Like with his father and things like that. And I think you have to be, you know, pretty socially mature to, you know, pick something like that out with like, cause it was nothing really overt and there wasn't really a point where Shaggy, you know, sat and pondered, you know, like why is he doing this? Like he just sort of intuitively got it. But I say emotionally, he's not very mature, is how he handled, like he was very jealous when Scooby started getting praise, which, you know, I guess it makes sense. You know, he was alone for a while and was kind of scared and didn't really know how to process those feelings.
I think it also kind of, you know, boils down to like the never meet your heroes kind of thing. Because Scooby wasn't really that big of a fan of Blue Falcon until Shaggy introduced Blue Falcon to him. So Blue Falcon was Shaggy's hero before it was ever Scooby's. And I think Scooby in his mind was thinking probably like, oh my goodness, you know, like this is great for the both of us. You know, like this is going to be great. This is both of our heroes. Woohoo. Because it was never really his hero to begin with. But Shaggy always loved Blue Falcon and then, you know, when he finally meets his hero, is probably pretty let down by the fact that, yeah, like, he's jealous that Blue Falcon is choosing to highlight Scooby over him, as well as he's kind of not much of a hero.
Although I do think what kind of saves it a bit for Shaggy is that this is the son of the Blue Falcon that he knows, so I think it doesn't really carry as much weight as it could have. So I think that kind of saved him a bit.
That's fair. Okay.
Anything else on Shaggy?
I think that's it.
All right. Fred Jones.
We both had that moment of like, well,
Yeah, he's a character.
He is the character. A character in Scooby.
He's like, they call him the tank slash muscle, and I guess, you know, because he tackles the criminals and ghosts and monsters, but like, he really came up as like a pretty boy metrosexual type, and I wonder, would he really get his hands dirty? Because I think a tank would require getting a little dirty, you know.
Right, or taking a, you know, some bruising or what have you. What he kind of comes off to me is like, he's like the face of Mr. Inc. He doesn't really do too much except for, you know, like CEOs, they're really more, they don't make too many major decisions, but they're the face of a company, known for their reputation or this or that, like, and, you know, other people in the gang may not be as people oriented as he might. So he might be like the negotiator or, something, you know, like, versus, really doing a whole lot of work. To me, he comes off like a Brad type, you know, like very Barbie and Ken kind of style.
The official term is Chad.
By the way. A Chad. Sorry. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, but I feel that Fred is the like self-imposed leader. Like, I think that, you know, since he's relatively like, you know, he's good looking and he's like charismatic, I think that since, you know, Shaggy doesn't seem to be interested in that kind of thing, Daphne is, you know, like in most carnations of Scooby-Doo, Fred and Daphne are in a relationship or they're like kind of flirting. So I kind of imagine Daphne as like the, you know, like the, okay. So, you know, like when you, have you ever like, done like a driving test and the driving instructor has like a brake on the passenger side?
Yeah.
So I imagine Daphne is like the passenger side driver, but like she's really the one in control. But she likes to make Fred think that he has the control.
She's like the guiding voice, you know?
Right. Because they stated her as the empath.
Oh, right. Okay.
So that makes sense. And I feel that Velma, she really doesn't care about that. Like, she just wants to get the job done, which would lead Fred to be the leader, I guess.
Right. And we can talk more about Velma here in a second. But yeah, Fred is like, he seems like the kind of person that relies on others heavily to do like the dirty work, you know? Not so much like, he's not much of a go-getter to me. He's just like, yeah, like, I'm the face of the company, I don't really have to do much else. Or like, he might be the person that finds the gigs, or maybe that's Daphne, you know, something like that. But he's also very easily distracted, and seems to me like he probably has a high sex drive.
There was the scene where like they were pulled over by like a cop, and I guess like at this point maybe like him and Daphne weren't a thing, so. Or maybe he just, you know, he's just like the flirty type and doesn't really care about that. But yeah, like, he makes no no qualms about it and just does it. And I think you mentioned something about something, but it made me think of, you know, he probably didn't really have to try hard in life and just got things, so he doesn't really try hard with this thing and just sees it as like a fun thing to do, but not serious, but not like a serious job.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's not maybe his end goal, or maybe he's got ulterior motives or something. Who knows? You know, like, he might be somewhat of a sociopath and, like, you know, or a master manipulator. I'm not saying that those are bad things. Those are just, you know, character psychology, like, pinpoints. And not every sociopath is, like, a morbid, disgusting, or, you know, like, out to kill somebody or do something. They're just, you know, they're really good at not having emotions towards other people.
Right, right. To that point, I think I, like, heard something about, what's his name? One of the Paul brothers, like Jake Paul or whatever the other one is, was, like, a sociopath or something. And I can, like, really see that in Fred, so.
Oh, he's so a Fred. They're both Freds.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Chads.
So if they did a live-action Scooby-Doo, one of those guys should be Fred.
They'd be perfect.
Anything else on Fred?
I think that's it.
Down to Daphne Blake. I didn't really have any notes on her. What did you think?
She's very much like Fred in this movie. And I think this kind of goes back to, like, how the movie kind of portrays its characters. Because there's a lot of characters in this movie. So they kind of had to put some of the other main characters on back burner. Because this is really more about Scooby and Shaggy than it is the rest of the gang. Now, we see them, but they're kind of blander in this. Now, in the past, like, I've seen Daphne be, like, a martial arts master or something, and she's, you know, super knowledgeable. She's kind of a badass chick in her own way, which is really awesome. But in this movie, there wasn't really much character development, no real thing to kind of grasp onto and be like, you know, this is her psychology or, you know, what have you. So it's hard to show her personality or to pinpoint her personality. But she seems like a very strong female lead in anything that she, you know, her character is in.
Right. Yeah, like, there wasn't really much screen time for her, but there was this scene when they were in, like, this jail cell, and like, she was, like, the one trying to, like she was trying to, like, she was the one trying to think like Scooby and Shaggy and trying to, like trip some like sort of trap to, like, let them escape. So that's cool that, like, she saw the value in Scooby and Shaggy.
Yeah, and she was inquisitive, and that, I think, was very, very telling of her feelings. And you know what? Going back to the empath thing that you said, that's right on point with how an empath would act.
Cool. Yeah, he's you know, like, she, you know, she didn't get much screen time, but it was, like, short and sweet and valuable when she was there.
Right. Right.
Anything else on her?
No. I think we're ready for Velma.
All right, Velma. Velma, definitely, I think, the true leader of Mystery Inc. She's the strategist. She has, like, the tech and stuff. But I think that she's too focused on, like, the practical stuff, like solving mysteries. So she just lets Fred do the leading.
Yeah. She kind of does a very similar thing that Fred does. And I think that's why this whole gang kind of works well together, because they each have their own role and none of them have to take on more than one role in that sense. Because she relies heavily on Fred and Velma to be the face, so she doesn't have to. And I'm thinking it's because she's not as much of a people person. You know, like, not everybody would understand her outside of the gang and be, like, you know, accepting of her quirky personality, maybe.
Right. And to your point of her, like, not being a people person, we first see her as a kid with a Ruth Bader Ginsburg costume.
Yeah.
Which is pretty like strange for a kid. So I think that that kind of like brings on the uniqueness of her character and the independence, which you have here in your notes. And I think like she really needs Daphne and Fred to thrive, because I don't think that she could do this thing just by herself. So to your point again, this is a really like well-balanced team, and they need each other.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely do. But you're probably right about her being like the true leader, because she's kind of the mastermind behind everything. And she always takes the lead whenever something really needs to get done. And she doesn't really ask her questions or, you know, say, hey, I'm going to do this. She just does it kind of and makes her own decisions with the team or without the team.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else on her?
Nope.
All right, we have Blue Falcon next, and he is the son of the Blue Falcon that Shaggy looks up to, and he's a very different kind of person from his dad. He's an egomaniac in many ways, and he's a coward when we first see him.
I don't know if he ever really changes from being a coward throughout the film, other than like he may grow in his desire to show off. Does that make sense?
Grow in his desire to show off, like,
because it was only after Shaggy kind of exposed him for who he was it that Blue Falcon was like, okay, let me try and be a hero.
Right, because throughout the film, like, he was looking for his hero moment, and like he gained the courage towards the end to like fight crime. But you know, now that he has the courage, he will like be more active in like trying to like be more boastful and like showy, right? Is that what you're trying to say?
Right.
Yeah.
Because he may have never been hero material to begin with. But he kind of had to fill in the shoes of his father, which is really sad, but I don't know. Blue Falcon's kind of a sad character.
Right, yeah. And like, thinking about kids of famous people, I wonder how much of a burden these people have in like trying to, like, do they feel pressure to live up to their parents? Or, I don't know, it seems like a lot of stress put on them.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to live in the shoes or like beneath the shoes of somebody unless I knew that they didn't expect of me the same thing, you know?
Yeah, they're their own person. They may want to do something different with their life than what their parents did.
Exactly. And it's not fair for Blue Falcon to put that kind of pressure on himself. Because he doesn't really have his own personality, as far as we can tell. You know, he's just very optimistic, kind of maybe living in the clouds a little bit too much.
Yeah, it kind of feels like a kid, like, playing dress up and just, like, having fun.
Yep.
And I think that, actually, he, instead of a superhero, he might actually make a pretty good actor or something.
Yeah. Maybe that should be a career he pursues other than trying to be a hero. Because that's really what it is. He's just trying a hero. He's not really filling that whole position very well.
Anything else?
Yeah. I mean, he does also, like, rely on Dino Mutt and DD Skies to do everything. And he doesn't really say thank you or, you know, ask very nicely.
Yeah, he's... you saying that kind of made me think that he's kind of the Fred of his group.
Oh yeah.
but I don't remember what he said exactly, but Fred said something that like he said something that was like really supportive of like Scooby and Shaggy, which like kind of separates them a bit. Like, I think that Fred, even though he wouldn't admit it to his group, he values like Scooby and Shaggy. But
yeah,
like I don't really see Blue Falcon doing the same.
Yeah, that's definitely very different.
Next.
Yeah. So our last character psychology is Dick Dastardly, which could we talk about his name real quick? I laughed pretty hard when I heard that.
He definitely lives up to it, both first and last name. Yeah, his Dick Dastardly, a famous Hanna-Barbera character as well, who's like he's looking for like this treasure or something. And he's like getting like the Cerberus heads to like open the portal or something. It was kind of confusing, but Muttley, like Muttley is his dog sidekick, and I think that Dick and Muttley have a interesting relationship in how they're kind of frenemies. Like they kind of hate each other, but they like each other sometimes.
Yeah. It's a love-hate relationship.
Yeah, yeah. He's actually a surprisingly competent villain, and I think that was pretty cool. They got away to steal another day.
Good for them.
They earned it.
Yeah, they did. You know, they needed to get reunited so that Dick Dastardly would stop being mean to his little robots, because he was taking out a lot of his anger on them.
I don't think, I'm trying to think of like a deeper thing to him, but I don't know. He seems pretty straightforward. He knows what he wants, doesn't show any remorse or anything. He's pretty straightforward.
I think that's one thing is like, what is that quote? Like, you know, you try to be good for so long and then one day you wake up and you find yourself that you're the villain
You can die the hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
That's what it is. And I think that's why I really like his character. He's fun.
Right. And thinking more about it, is like Dick Dastardly his real name? Or was that something he thought of himself? And if it is his real name, then maybe he felt some sort of subconscious obligation to like live up to it.
Right. And I don't think we know enough about his like past experiences to really fully characterize his personality, other than, you know, he's very self-driven. He's obviously very intelligent. He loves animals.
Well,
he loves one animal.
Well, like he did kind of try to sacrifice, like he used Muttley as like a test. But when he saw him again, he was like ecstatic, like he was overjoyed, and I think he said I'm sorry or something.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, that's his best friend.
Right. That's great that like villains can like have friends, because you know, like sometimes they'll they'll at first chance they'll like throw them to the wolves and stuff like that, but you know, he stuck with them, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and he's also really good at masking himself into different characters, which is kind of like, I think that says a lot about his personality.
He's a chameleon.
He's what?
A chameleon.
Yes.
So he's like a master at manipulation. And that's a trait that he has. Comes in handy, I guess.
But what I don't understand is how can a dog be so...
Don't know, but there was this movie, I think it was based on a book, but it was kind of, it was different. The movie is, White Dog, where this dude, teaches, okay, so the book version, this black dude teaches his dog to hate white people, and in the movie, it's vice versa. So I guess like he did the same thing, trained him or something to like do his crimes with him.
Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Cause back to like Scooby, I think like part of why Shaggy and Scooby's relationship works is that, you know, like animals, like dogs are like food driven. So it's kind of nice to like constantly have food there for him. To like get him to do stuff, you know, like the whole Scooby Snacks thing. So that makes sense.
Oh yeah, like let's go into the scary spooky house for a Scooby Snack.
Right. Makes sense.
Okay.
So I guess Muttley is kind of different. Like, he's like maybe like praise driven or like money driven.
He's more human like.
Mm-hmm. That's all I have.
Yeah, I think that was pretty good. I mean, there was a lot of other characters in this, but, you know, they weren't as prominent or, you know, whatever in this film. And I think we kind of covered all the bases here.
Yeah. I'm surprised that we got like almost 40 minutes of stuff to talk about this movie of like the characters and stuff. That's kind of surprising. Sonic was another one that was surprisingly rich of stuff to talk about. You just never know sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And this was a really good film. Excellent film. I'm really glad that we were able to cover this because, you know, all the theaters are shut down, so they decided to do a different route with production and how they kind of released it. But, you know, I was able to watch this on YouTube. It was about $20-$21 with tax to rent it for 48 hours. I'm sure you can buy it for like, I think it's $24. You just buy the whole film and then you have it forever and you can watch it as you want. But we'll see how this movie does. Like, you know, it's opening weekend for them, I guess. So I don't know what the box office is going to be like how much, you know, box office, quote unquote. How much money they're gonna make back quickly.
Right. Like we talked about this on, I think it was our shorts episode, and like basically with the theater showings, you're like paying for each ticket, like each person. But for this, like if you have like a family of like four and you're paying $19 to rent it, That's like you're not really like making your profit back in the same way. So I'm really curious to like know what they make this weekend.
Yeah, and if you go like if there's a website, they have a website for this movie. I checked it out before I decided to watch it, and they have a lot of really fun, cute, interactive stuff that you can do with your kids. On the website, there's like coloring pages, there's recipes, there's all kinds of games that you can play on there to kind of get your kids psyched up for this film, or, you know, have a fun movie night or play date, something like that.
Definitely go check that out. And do you have any final words?
No.
All right. We'll catch you next time as we talk about A Silent Voice. Stay safe, you guys, and we'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to Saga Podcast, where we talk about animation and animation things. This is your favorite co-host, Sarah, and I would like to remind you before you head off that we do have a Twitter, a Facebook, an Instagram, a website, and soon to be a Patreon. So if you could reach out to us, leave us a comment, a review, anything that you like, and we will appreciate all of it. Otherwise, have a wonderful week, and we will see you next time.
Bye. See you next time. Hope you liked it. Come again.